Ready?
Yes.
Ready? Please.
May it please the court, Megan Shoup of Reagan, Melton, and Delaney on behalf of the appellant, Mr. Brock Worgan. In this case, the appellant respectfully requests that this matter be reversed and remanded to the district court with instructions to vacate the order entered December 4th, 2018, which affirmed the ex parte protection order. And that was entered to the benefit of the appellee, Ms. Klein, and against Mr. Worgan. And just as a background, these two parties are no longer engaged in a relationship, nor were they at the time this was filed, but they have previously been intimate partners, and they do share a child in common. As with any protection order case, we understand that mootness is an issue. While this is not moot yet and the protection order is still in place, we understand that while this is being decided, this may very well become a moot case. We would ask that the court move forward with its decision because we would argue that there are certain aspects of this that need to be addressed that would help other district courts in making similar decisions. The appellant argues that the district court erred in affirming the ex parte domestic abuse protection order because the evidence adduced at trial does not show any of the elements necessary to prove that domestic abuse occurred. Specifically, there was no evidence that the appellant caused appellee any bodily injury, nor evidence that he made a credible threat to place the appellee in fear of any bodily injury or made any threat against her.
There had been at least one or two prior incidents, correct? One, a grabbing around the neck.
There was an incident in which it's alleged that the appellant grabbed or pushed her while they engaged, while they worked out a custody exchange. However, that was 4 to 5 months prior to trial, and there was no evidence of any injury that came of that. It was just a physical contact. Further, even if the district court was correct in its decision of finding that domestic abuse had occurred, we would argue that there's another step that needs to be done. There are other factors to consider in looking at a protection order and whether that should be affirmed or whether it should be vacated, and that there's no evidence that the district court looked at any other factors. In looking at the petitioner and Ms. Klein's petition and affidavit for her domestic abuse protection order, she alleges three different reasons why she's in need of a protection order. The first was that Mr. Worgan was under investigation at the time, and there's an allegation that there were child pornography issues. He had not been charged. There were no pending charges at that time. She just lists this investigation. Her second reason is she alleges that there is continuous harassment and that he continues to text her and call her and show about her house. And her third reason was that he had threatened to not return the child or threatened to keep the minor child longer than his parenting time. In looking at her allegations and in looking at the evidence that was produced at trial in her testimony, we would argue that none of that meets her burden of the preponderance of the evidence to show that domestic abuse had in fact occurred. And in looking at the three reasons that the district court cites in its order, the district court sets out that it found the appellant engaged in one of the following. One, that the appellant attempted to cause or intentionally, knowingly, or recklessly caused bodily injury to the petitioner. Second, that by means of a credible threat, the appellant placed the petitioner in fear of bodily injury. Or third, that the appellant engaged in sexual contact or penetration without consent. That third prong, which are the three prongs of Section 42903, which defines domestic abuse, that third prong in reference to engaging in sexual contact, none of that was alleged in her petition, brought up at trial, or alleged in the appellee's brief. And
what,
so I don't believe
that
issue.
What about the second one, though?
The second one. Correct. So as far as the credible threat language, a credible threat is defined in Section 42903, further means that at trial there must include some threat of intentional physical injury or any other physical threat. Looking at even just her language of a threat in her petition for a domestic abuse protection order, the threat she references is that he threatened to not return the child or to keep the child longer than his parenting time. There was nothing physical about that threat. That's a custody issue between these two parties that could in no way be interpreted reasonably to make her fear for her safety. The other issues that came up at trial, she was asked specifically what kind of threats Mr. Worgan makes, and her response was just anything that he possibly can.
There was one, she indicated that he yelled at her, "I'm going to see our daughter, you're going to pay for this."
Correct. And Mr. Worgen testified that he was referring to he was going to take her back to court. Mm-hmm. So while this, the kind of background of this is that she had begun denying him parenting time. Mr. Worgen testified that he had not seen his daughter since the beginning of October, and she filed this in November. So there was about a month's time where she had denied his parenting time. He continued to call her, he continued to text her, and he did go to her house during his designated parenting time. The two have entered into a stipulated parenting plan in which it requires him to go to her house to pick up his daughter to exercise his parenting time. He went to her house in an attempt to exercise that parenting time, and she denied his visitation. She's now used that his presence at her house as her basis of filing this protection order. And again, he's continuing to reach out and continuing to try to contact her in an attempt to exercise his parenting time.
So with regard to that second prong, let's call it,
mm-hmm.
she testified that he had grabbed her 4 or 5 months before the show cause hearing at a parenting exchange. She testified that after that incident where your client grabbed her, his tone, voice, manner, and the way he carried himself became more aggressive. Her mother testified that she saw your client push Klein at a parenting exchange in late summer of 2018, and then Klein also testified that she was concerned for her safety because of the mental, physical, and emotional abuse she has endured over the past 6 years. So are you indicating to me that that was not sufficient enough to qualify for that second prong?
I don't believe that that was sufficient enough. And in looking at her petition itself, she doesn't reference her fear. She doesn't reference that she has this fear of him. And that's also evidenced in that there was actually a prior protection order between these two that had expired prior to her entering into a stipulated parenting plan with Mr. Worgen.
And was that prior one an abuse protection order or a harassment protection order?
I believe that was also a domestic abuse protection order, but I would have to verify that. I don't have that in front of me.
So counsel, in terms of the statute, it talks about either attempting to cause or causing bodily injury, or the second prong, the threat that causes fear of bodily injury. Do you have case law that defines what qualifies as bodily injury under this statute?
I do not have that in front of me. I do not have that off the top of my head. But I would argue that if an incident in which he either grabbed or pushed her, in which she doesn't allege that she suffered any physical injuries from that, that would not give rise to bodily injury.
And so your position, I take it, is her allegation of physical contact isn't sufficient to qualify as bodily injury.
That is the argument that I would make. They had one incident in her entire testimony at trial and her application her petition for the protection order. She only had one incident of physical contact between the two of them, which occurred 4 to 5 months prior to her filing for the protection order.
Well, wasn't there two separate incidents, one where she said she was struck by him and the other one, who was the pushing, or are those the same?
I don't believe that there was an allegation that she was struck by him. And in fact, when counsel asked her, were these threats that Mr. Worgen's making, these threats of I'm going to see her, you're going to pay for this, were these threats to cause you physical harm, and she said no. In reviewing the record, the only incident in which she references that there was a physical contact between the two of them is this incident in which she says that he either pushed or shoved her.
Was there any discussion at the trial court of converting this to a harassment protection order rather than a domestic abuse protection order?
There was not. And I understand the district court does have that power if the evidence had shown that this was, in fact, a qualification for a harassment protection order. The district court could have entered it as such and did not. And while we argue that this, again, if it becomes moot, we would still urge the court to make a decision, because one of the issues in dealing with this case is that there were no specific findings, that the district court used the blanket language of 42-903 and listed that it had found that one of the three prongs of abuse had occurred with no other indication as to what qualifies for that, with such little evidence to show that there was any bodily injury or that there was a credible threat, and yet it still entered the protection order, it places appellants in a difficult position in determining what it was that actually proved that there was any sort of domestic abuse. And I am out of time. If there are no further questions, I would just ask the court reverse and remand with instructions to vacate.
Thank you.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning.
Dan Stover. I'm here on behalf of Ms. Klein. May it please the court and counsel. Six words. You're going to pay for this. That's after Ms. Klein had been physically harmed or attempted to be physically harmed by Mr. Wergen. He's got threatening behavior. He is, unlike what appellant says, that he was continuing to reach out for parenting time. He was constantly texting. He was constantly, you're going to pay for this.
But what in that language, you're going to pay for this, is a threat of bodily injury?
I think it can be assumed to be a threat of bodily injury. It can be construed to mean physical harm. And as has been noted by other counsel here today, the trial court was able to see these witnesses, was able to observe their demeanor. When it's in conflict, this court, I respectfully submit, can give weight to that fact, that the trial judge was the one that actually observed the testimony, the demeanor of this testimony. You don't have the opportunity to see that. You get to read about it, but you don't get to observe. And I think that in this case, I think that that's a crucial element.
So you point out physical harm in this record, and the test is one of bodily injury. Do you think those things mean the same thing, and what is your evidence of physical harm?
Well, there was testimony that has been noted that 4 to 5 months earlier, that she had been pushed or struck. And also her mother testified that she had witnessed the appellant pushing Ms. Klein. There was a credible threat here. Unlike what the facts were in a recent case that came down from this court, Britton v. Sims, that came down July 30th, 2019. I'm sorry, I didn't have the cite. But in that case, the court found there was no credible threat because the defendant in that case had no verbal communication, any communication at all with the alleged victim. In this case, the evidence showed that the appellant had made verbal threats, had made threats by text. These were credible threats. She had been physically touched in a violent manner by him, not once, but twice before that.
Well, okay, so tell me about the twice. I'm confused by this record.
I believe that she testified that she was, and I don't have the exact wording, but that she was struck by Mr. Wergen 4 to 5 months prior.
Was she struck or was she grabbed?
You're right. I apologize. You may be correct. I think it was grabbed.
And the police were called at that incident by him. Is that how I understand it?
Well, actually, the police were called by I believe, his girlfriend and also by one of Ms. Klein's family members. I'm not sure if it was Ms. Klein or her mother, but I think both parties contacted the police at that time. And going back to the credible threats issue, in this Britton case that was decided by this court, it says that the statute doesn't define what threat is, so it's given its plain and ordinary meaning. The meaning of threat is communication, declaration, or expression of an intention to inflict harm or damage.
Okay, so again, back to the record. As I read it, she admitted that there had been no physical contact after the one time he grabbed her, and she also admitted that any threats he made were not threats to physically harm her. That was her testimony.
I understand, and I'm not sure that she understood exactly what the question was. I cannot speak to that, but there had been past verbal, psychological, and physical abuse in this case. It was over a matter.
Was there any specific testimony about past physical abuse?
Just the shoving, and the grabbing,
which maybe was the same incident.
I do not believe it was the same incident, Judge. this is also, they said something about denying parenting time. That's a matter for the, in the paternity case. That's not a matter for this specific case. Credible threat is verbal or written threat, including via electronic communication. As we know, there's a lot of electronic communication in this case. It was testified about. There was a lot of texting.
Were those text messages offered in evidence?
They were not, Judge. Yeah. There was a pattern of conduct, though. I mean, the combination of the verbal threats, the written threats, which were made electronically, I believe that she could find that she was in fear for her safety. It's not necessary to prove that he that was making the threat had the intent to carry it out. He made threats, and I think that a reasonable person would see those things as threats. Again, you're going to pay for this. The judge saw her demeanor on the stand. It was a real fear. It was a real threat in Ms. Klein's mind, and it was a credible threat. Again, you were not able to see that, the trial court was. There's also some mention about this being some sort of a way to not file a modification action. That's simply not the case. There were threats. She felt threatened. That's an appropriate avenue to take when there's threats and possibly physical threats. Modification action is not going to stop that. Modification action does not address the possible threats. That is, I don't think, a relevant matter, nor does it belong in this case. There's also some notes that the incident case was not petitioned for her safety, but as a means of interfering with his parental rights. I think that this, again, is something that goes to the paternity matter as far as the denial of parenting time. It's not something that is part of this case. This case is about her feeling threatened and Mr. Wergen continually becoming more aggressive, as she testified, again, with texting, with pounding on the door, with drive-bys, with, I think, everything like that he did could be interpreted as a threat. I don't see that there's any reason the court should not have kept this in place after the ex parte. There was credible threat here. She was very scared. Not necessary to prove that he meant to do anything in the future. We don't have to show that. But she could obviously infer that. I believe that's what the statute is for. I believe that's what an order like this is for, to prevent. And I believe it says that. Future harm. This is the way you stop possible future harm, is with an order from the court saying, stay away. And I also believe that when they mentioned the not filing for a modification, there was an ongoing investigation of child pornography, and that pornography involved Ms. Klein. So as far as dealing with parenting matters and things of that nature in a modification action, I don't believe that it would be appropriate to file something like that when there's an investigation going on of the actual person and if what would happen if in the future he's convicted of that. I mean, how is that going to affect parenting time? In my mind, you could go do a modification and say, well, I want, you know, this parenting time changed here, this parenting time changed here. Then a month later he's convicted. Well, then you're going back into the court saying, okay, this is different. We've got a material change in circumstances. He's been convicted. He is convicted of a child pornography case.
But you're talking about the paternity action, not this protection order.
That's correct, Judge. I'm just saying that filing, it doesn't seem that it would be logical, I guess, to file a modification at that time while an investigation is going on, because things might change. You know, the court doesn't want to see you every 2 months with the material change in circumstances. And I believe that a conviction would be a material change in circumstances. So waiting until that is resolved, I think, is the appropriate approach before filing for a modification. But I do believe in this case that there's credible threat here. She was scared. The court saw her demeanor. She was definitely scared and had been and didn't file right away, but he continued and continued to threaten, whether it be verbal, psychological. He continued to threaten. She didn't file this right away, but she found that she needed to try and stop this happening in the future. With that, I submit. Thank you.
Thank you.
Any remaining time?
No, Your Honor.
Okay. Matter submitted. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
That concludes the call today. Thank you very much.